Welcome to Learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver. Our 30-minute program is designed especially for English learners. We speak a little slowly, using simple sentences and a limited vocabulary. Today, we have reports from Brian Lynn and Susan Shand. Later, Jill Robbins brings us Ask a Teacher. And we close the show with an American story. Today we hear the tale of Paul Bunyan. But now, here is Brian Lynn.
The American space agency NASA says its Mars lander has noted what scientists believe was the first Mars quake ever recorded. The seismic signal was measured and recorded on April 6th by NASA's InSight lander, the space agency announced this week. InSight landed on Mars in November 2018. Its goal is to explore the inside of the red planet and measure geological conditions. The likely Mars quake was picked up by a special device called a seismometer, which is used to measure seismic waves. The device was built for InSight by France's National Space Agency. The seismometer was designed to be extremely sensitive. It aims to differentiate between seismic signals coming from inside Mars and activity coming from above the surface, such as wind or meteorite movements. This is the first recorded trembling that appears to have come from inside the planet. NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory, or JPL, said in a statement. The laboratory is based in Pasadena, California. Scientists will continue to examine the recording in an attempt to confirm the exact cause of the signal. The InSight exploration team released audio of the possible Mars quake. For comparison purposes, the audio begins with what NASA scientists say is the sound of wind on Mars. This is followed by a rising sound thought to be the Mars quake. Scientists say the recorded activity was comparable to a 2.5 strong earthquake on our own planet. Such a small earthquake would likely not even be felt on Earth's surface. Seismically active areas in the United States, like Southern California, for example, experience many similarly small earthquakes each week. But Bruce Bannert, an investigator with the JPL, believes even the small measurement marks an important new beginning. He said InSight's instrument had already been working effectively to collect background noise since landing on Mars. But this first event officially kicks off a new field, Martian seismology, Bannert said. Philippe Lanonnier is a geophysics and planetary science professor at the University Paris Diderot in France. He was a lead researcher on the InSight seismometer project. He told the Reuters news agency that the Mars results were very similar to quake activity measured on other planets. So we are very confident that this is a Mars quake, he said. Long Ongye predicted that in the future, InSight would measure quakes 50 to 100 times larger than the one on April 6th. Quakes on Earth happen along faults created by the movement of tectonic plates. Mars and Earth's moon do not have tectonic plates, but they still experience quakes. Repeated changes in temperature and size of material inside the planets can create pressure over time. When this pressure becomes intense enough to break the planet's outer crust, it causes a quake. Bannert said InSight's new finding is a continuation of experiments that began with NASA's Apollo space program in the 1960s. Apollo astronauts put 5 seismometers on the moon that measured thousands of quakes between 1969 and 1977. NASA says scientists were able to use that information to learn many new things about the inside of the moon. Now, the NASA team hopes InSight's seismometer can provide scientists with valuable information about Mars and other planets, too. By studying the deep interior of Mars, they hope to learn how other rocky worlds, including Earth and the Moon, formed, NASA said in a statement. I'm Brian Lynn.
Ohio University biologist Nancy Stevens was looking through a drawer of a wooden container at a museum in Kenya when she saw a piece of rock with extremely large teeth. She knew immediately she had come across something important. The rock and other things she found were overlooked fossils. They were stored at the National Museums of Kenya in the capital city of Nairobi. The fossils came from one of the largest meat-eating mammals ever to walk the earth. They belong to an animal known as Simba Kubwa Kutokafrika. It lived in Africa 22 million years ago. Stevens came across the fossils in 2010. This month, she and co-writer Matthew Bort published their research about the animal in the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. The animal was bigger than any meat-eating mammal alive today. Its skull was the size of a rhino's skull. Its teeth were as large as bananas. It weighed about 1 ton and was 2.5 meters long. According to the research, the fossils were found around 1980 in western Kenya, but they were never closely examined. Stevens said, most of the specimens that I study are quite small, so you can imagine my surprise when I opened a drawer that I hadn't examined yet and saw the enormous teeth. Simba Kubwa was a member of an animal group that appeared 62 million years ago. That was about 4 million years after the extinction of the dinosaurs, which created an environment for mammals to take over. The animal came before meat-eating cats and wolves. It became extinct about 9 million years ago, researchers say. Simba Kubwa's name means big lion in the Swahili language. However, it is not a cat. It was the largest animal hunter in its ecosystem and was probably the largest meat-eating land mammal in Africa up to that time. I'm Susan Shand.
Today on Ask a Teacher, we answer an email from Nathaniel in South Sudan. He asks,
what is the difference between phone, call, and ring?
Hi, Nathaniel. That is a great question. We use these words when talking about telephone calls and other kinds of communication. All three words can be used as nouns and have a verb form. Today, I will be looking at the verb forms. The Scottish-born scientist and engineer, Alexander Graham Bell, is famous for his invention of the telephone. In 1876, the United States government approved a patent on Bell's telephone. The move gave him the exclusive right to the technology, so no one else could manufacture or sell his invention for a number of years. Since that time, people have shortened the noun telephone to phone and started to use it as a verb, meaning to call someone on a telephone. In Britain, it is common to hear people use the verb ring for this same purpose. But there is no rule that requires a speaker of American English to only use phone or a speaker of British English to only use ring. Here are some examples of how we use phone.
Can I phone my wife? She would know the answer to this. She couldn't stop to phone for help.
You may hear the verb ring when someone talks about the sound of alarm bells.
I heard the doorbell ring. The sign said, ring for service.
In addition, a common two-word verb is ring up. We may ask a store employee to ring up our purchase, that is, enter the prices on a machine. Google's Ngram Viewer is an online tool to learn about words. It looks at the words from Google Books to show how often people use words over time and in what places. We used the Google Ngram Viewer to compare British and American usage of the three words. The first Ngram looked at British English. It found that the word ring was a little more popular than phone. The second Ngram looked at American English. It found that phone is more popular than ring. In both online tests, the word call was much more common than either phone or ring. English speakers often use call to talk about using the telephone to contact someone, such as in the following sentence.
Call the police.
Even more often, we use it in a general sense, as in give a name to or label.
They do not want us to call them pirates, but they are stealing. Do you call that bag of potato chips your dinner?
We also use call in the sense of ask or request.
Let's call a meeting for tomorrow afternoon.
So here's my advice on using phone, call, and ring. You can use any one of them to refer to making a telephone call, call is the most common in American English. As you learn more English, you will learn many expressions that include call. I'll share one with you here.
Let's call it a day.
That is, our work is done. Let's take a deep breath and relax. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Long ago, the people who settled in undeveloped areas in America first told tall tales. After a hard day's work, people gathered to tell each other funny stories. Each group of workers had its own tall tale hero. Paul Bunyan was a hero of North America's lumberjacks, the workers who cut down trees. He was known for his strength, speed, and skill. Tradition says he cleared forests from the northeastern United States to the Pacific Ocean. Some people say Paul Bunyan was the creation of storytellers from the middle western Great Lakes area of the United States. Other people say the stories about him came from French Canada. Early in the 20th century, a writer prepared a collection of Paul Bunyan stories. They were included in a publication from the Red River Lumber Company in Minnesota. It is not known if the stories helped the company's sales, but they became extremely popular. Here is Shep O'Neill with our story about Paul Bunyan.
Many years ago, Paul Bunyan was born in the northeastern American state of Maine. His mother and father were shocked when they first saw the boy. Paul was so large at birth that five large birds had to carry him to his parents. When the boy was only a few weeks old, he weighed more than 45 kilograms. As a child, Paul was always hungry. His parents needed 10 cows to supply milk for his meals. Before long, he ate 50 eggs and 10 containers of potatoes every day. Young Paul grew so big that his parents did not know what to do with him. Once, Paul rolled over so much in his sleep that he caused an earthquake. This angered people in the town where his parents lived, so the government told his mother and father they would have to move him somewhere else. Paul's father built a wooden cradle, a traditional bed for a baby. His parents put the cradle in waters along the coast of Maine. However, every time Paul rolled over, huge waves covered all the coastal towns. So his parents brought their son back on land. They took him into the woods. This is where he grew up. As a boy, Paul helped his father cut down trees. Paul had the strength of many men. He also was extremely fast. He could turn off a light and then jump into his bed before the room got dark. Maine is very cold for much of the year. One day, it started to snow. The snow covered Paul's home and a nearby forest. However, this snow was very unusual. It was blue. The blue snow kept falling until the forest was covered. Paul put on his snowshoes and went out to see the unusual sight. As he walked, Paul discovered an animal stuck in the snow. It was a baby ox. Paul decided to take the ox home with him. He put the animal near the fireplace. After the ox got warmer, his hair remained blue. Paul decided to keep the blue ox and named him Babe. Babe grew very quickly. One night, Paul left him in a small building with the other animals. The next morning, the barn was gone, and so was Babe. Paul searched everywhere for the animal. He found Babe calmly eating grass in a valley, with the barn still on top of his back. Babe followed Paul and grew larger every day. Every time Paul looked, Babe seemed to grow taller. In those days, much of North America was filled with thick green forests. Paul Bunyan could clear large wooded areas with a single stroke of his large, sharp axe. Paul taught Babe to help with his work. Babe was very useful. For example, Paul had trouble removing trees along a road that was not straight. He decided to tie one end of the road to what remained of a tree in the ground. Paul tied the other end to Babe. Babe dug his feet in the ground and pulled with all his strength until the road became straight. In time, Paul and Babe the Blue Ox left Maine and moved west to look for work in other forests. Along the way, Paul dug out the Great Lakes to provide drinking water for Babe. They settled in a camp near the Onion River in the state of Minnesota. Paul's camp was the largest in the country. The camp was so large that a man had to have 1 week's supply of food when walking from one side of the camp to the other. Paul decided to get other lumberjacks to help with the work. His work crew became known as the Seven Axe Men. Each man was more than 2 meters tall and weighed more than 160 kilograms. All of the axemen were named Elmer. That way, they all came running whenever Paul called them. The man who cooked for the group was named Sourdough Sam. He made everything, except coffee, from sourdough, a substance used in making sourdough bread. Every Sunday, Paul and his crew ate hotcakes. Each hotcake was so large that it took 5 men to eat one. Paul usually had 10 or more hotcakes, depending on how hungry he was. The table where the men ate was so long that a server usually drove to one end of the table and stayed the night. The server drove back in the morning with a fresh load of food. Paul needed someone to help with the camp's finances. He gave the job to a man named Johnny Inkslinger. Johnny kept records of everything, including wages and the cost of feeding Babe. He sometimes used 9 containers of writing fluid a day to keep such detailed records. The camp also was home to Sport, the reversible dog. One of the workers accidentally cut Sport in two. The man hurried to put the dog back together, but made a mistake. He bent the animal's back the wrong way. However, that was not a problem for Sport. He learned to run on his front legs until he was tired. Then he turned the other way and ran on his back legs. Big mosquitoes were a problem at the camp. The men attacked the insects with their axes and long sticks. Before long, the men put barriers around their living space. Then, Paul ordered them to get big bees to destroy the mosquitoes. But the bees married the mosquitoes, and the problem got worse. They began to produce young insects. One day, the insects' love of sweets caused them to attack a ship that was bringing sugar to the camp. At last, the mosquitoes and bees were defeated. They ate so much sugar, they could not move. Paul always gave Babe the Blue Ox a 35-kilogram piece of sugar when he was good, but sometimes Babe liked to play tricks. At night, Babe would make noises and hit the ground with his feet. The men at the camp would run out of the buildings where they slept, thinking it was an earthquake. When winter came, Babe had trouble finding enough food to eat. Snow covered everything. Ole, the blacksmith, solved the problem. He made huge green sunglasses for Babe. When Babe wore the sunglasses, he thought the snow was grass. Before long, Babe was strong and healthy again. One year, Paul's camp was especially cold. It was so cold that the men let their facial hair grow very long. When the men spoke, their words froze in the air. Everything they said remained frozen all winter long and did not melt until spring. Paul Bunyan and Babe left their mark on many areas. Some people say they were responsible for creating Puget Sound in the western state of Washington. Others say Paul Bunyan and Babe cleared the trees from the states of North Dakota and South Dakota. They prepared this area for farming. Babe the Blue Ox died in South Dakota. One story says he ate too many hotcakes. Paul buried his old friend there. Today, the burial place is known as the Black Hills. Whatever happened to Paul Bunyan? There are lots of stories. Some people say he was last seen in Alaska, or even the Arctic Circle. Another tradition says he still returns to Minnesota every summer. It says Paul moves in and out of the woods, so few people ever know that he is there.
And that's our show for today. For VOA Learning English, I'm Katie Weaver.